Hello everyone and welcome to episode 600 of So You Want to Be a Writer, the podcast that's all about writing and publishing. My name's Valerie Koo. I'm CEO of the Australian Writer Centre, the world's leading centre for writing courses, and I'm your host. What's been happening in your world? Over here, I can't believe there have been 600 episodes. How did we get here? How? Well, it certainly wouldn't be possible without you guys. Thank you so much for listening and for all of your comments and ideas and feedback. I really appreciate it, and I hope that you're continuing to find the podcast useful and interesting. It also wouldn't be possible without the incredible team at the Australian Writer Centre, who work very hard, harder than you know, behind the scenes to bring this podcast to you. It takes a village, as they say. And of course, to Nat Newman, who has been so generous with her advice and experiences and her weekly writing tips. And the wonderful Alison Tate, who, of course, was my partner in crime for the first 463 episodes or so. She's awesome and such a talented author as well. I've also been very busy preparing for our fantastic seminar, which is coming up. It's called Focus on Action, because all stories need action, right? Even the most, you know, emotional family drama will need some action. But if you're writing a crime story or a thriller or a fantasy or adventure or historical or science fiction, you're going to need to master the action scene. And that actually goes double for children's and young adult books where you can't afford to waste a word. So the next Focus On seminar will be on Thursday, the 2nd of May, and it's going to be a really fantastic, short and sharp exploration into the world of action. And it's going to tell you what you need to know if you are writing or if you need to include action in your story. It'll go from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Sydney, Melbourne time. And it will be an hour of instruction from Pamela Freeman. And you know, Pamela Freeman just gives you so much information and so many practical frameworks. It's never airy-fairy. It's very, very practical and doable with lots of takeaways. So she'll be conducting that for the first hour, and then we'll open up to your questions for half an hour. So that's Thursday, the 2nd of May. So make sure you sign up. You're going to leave the seminar understanding how to speed up the pace of your story if you need to make each movement and plot event clear to the reader, and give physical action an impact on the reader as well as the character, yeah? And of course, how to use narrative tension, how to use style to show the character's reaction to their specific situation, and how to raise the narrative tension with each sentence. So make sure you sign up. It's going to be a fantastic webinar. Find out more at writercentre.com.au/focusonaction. That's writercentre.com.au/focusonaction. And now let's welcome creative writing tutor, author, playwright, whole bunch of things, Nat Newman. How are you, Nat?
I'm great, Valerie. How are you?
Good. What's been happening in Nat world?
Well, I'm going to lie and say that I'm taking a little break.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't have any more performances or rehearsals right now. So I'm like, yay.
You actually taking a break? I don't really understand why you need to lie about that.
Because I'm not really taking a break, Valerie. I never really take a break. No, I've started pre-production for my next film. So,
meaning a film that you've written or that you're acting in or producing?
I've written it and I'm producing it, and I'm actually hoping I'm going to direct this one. I still haven't 100% decided, because it's a story about an older gay couple who are becoming grandfathers for the first time. And so, so the directors I've worked with in the past are fantastic, but I kind of feel like, because it's a queer story, maybe I would like to direct this one, but I haven't.
So is this a short film?
Yes, it's a short film. So this will be under probably, I think, 6 or 7 minutes. It's pretty short.
Okay, and where will are you planning to screen it? Or is this for like a particular competition or, you know, something like that?
This one's not for competition, but hopefully, if we get it edited and everything before the end of the year, we'll probably look at screening it in festivals next year, particularly around Pride and stuff.
I love how you're such a go-getter. Like literally a year ago or, you know, 18 months ago, if you said that you would be doing this, you would probably have surprised yourself, right?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
How did it start, by the way, the whole filmmaking thing? Remind me.
I was having sushi with my friend Will, and I was like, you know, I don't want to sit around waiting for opportunities. We should just make our own film. And he's like, okay. So that night I went home and I wrote a script and I sent it to him and I said, what do you think of this? And he said, I love it. I'm going to send it to my friend. He's a director. And so he sent it to his friend, who's a director, Eli Taran, who directed our first film. And then he sent it to his friend, Leah McLaren, who's a cinematographer. And then because I'm just such an organizing person after years of being a project manager, I was just like, all right, guys, let's get together and let's make this film and just kind of organize it all. And we made it. So, yeah.
You are a great organizer. Okay, well, can't now that your performances are over and you're taking this fake break,
Yeah.
can't wait to see what your next major thing is in addition to this film. So, what's your writing tip this week?
Oh my God, this is so important, you guys. Everyone out there, leave yourself notes in your manuscript.
What do you mean exactly?
So I can't tell you the number of times I've opened up a story or a novel that I'm working on, and I've looked at it and I've gone, I have no idea what I got up to last time I was working on this. And so now what I do is I leave myself big notes, right? So this is particularly true if you're editing, but even if you're writing something, particularly if you're not writing 100% linearly. Like, so for example, if you maybe you write 500 words, right? And then you close your Word document or you close Scrivener and you go away and you come back the next day and you open up that document and you cannot remember what you were working on yesterday, or as the case may be, last week or last month or 6 months
You
ago.
can't remember what you were working on. I mean, it's right there in front of you.
Yeah, but it isn't always. Like sometimes you might have actually gone back, as you know, you might, even though let's say it's 15 pages long, but then you went back and you worked on something on page three.
Oh,
And
right.
then, you know, so my big recommendation is leave yourself a note, because for whatever reason you have to close your document, right? And you don't know when you're going to open it again. Hopefully you're going to open it again tomorrow and work on it again tomorrow, but you don't always know. So leave yourself a note. So mine literally says in all caps, here, Newman, and lots of little asterisks, and then I highlight it. So that, then I just use Control F, or you know, find on Word. And I Google, I search for here Newman, and then I go, oh, okay, I remember now. This is what I was working on yesterday, and I'll even leave myself notes like, maybe introduce the grandfather at this point, or he has to remember that he kissed her, or whatever. Just leave myself little notes, because otherwise you will not remember what you were working on. It's so easy to, life happens. 24 hours have passed
Yes,
since you
true.
last worked on it, and sometimes more than that, sometimes a week, 2 weeks, and you don't know. Sometimes life gets in the way.
And I
Leave
think
yourself a
it's
note.
so important what you just said. You said, you know, maybe introduce the grandfather here or something like that. And my tip, just to be explicit, is make sure your notes are full sentences, like what you just
Yes.
said. Because so often I will go through a manuscript or a document and I'll see maybe the word grandfather. And I go,
Yeah.
what? I wrote, obviously, I wanted to do something regarding the grandfather there, but I have no recollection of exactly what was going through my head at the time. This
Yeah.
happens to me a lot. Like there's something in my notebook that I'm holding right now, and I think it says Python. One, I don't know why.
Maybe you want to learn
I have no idea. So
coding.
write full sentences. Don't
Yes.
think that one word memory jogger will actually do the
Yes.
trick.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes people are a bit afraid of kind of, in a way, scribbling on their manuscript. And I mean scribbling, even if you're on Word, even if you're typing, but scribble on your manuscript. Leave like, and what I use square brackets.
Yes.
Don't use regular brackets. Use a bracket that's easy to find, using Control F. And use square brackets or asterisks or whatever you need to use, and leave yourself big chunky notes. You know, and like if you don't if you know there's something you need to research, or you know there's a scene you need to write later, leave those big notes in there. Don't be afraid to make it messy. It's your document, and particularly a first and second draft. Like, the messier the better. Put on all the notes.
And I think that what you do with doing a search for Hey Newman, that's obviously your marker. I do three asterisks.
Yeah.
So that I only have to search for three asterisks, and then I find all the bits where I've got my notes. Yeah. So work out what your marker is for yourself, and it'll be a lot easier than reading through the whole thing looking for your note to yourself.
For sure.
That's a great tip. Thank you so much, Nat, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks. See you then.
Now let's move on to our competition this week. This week, I'm giving away three copies of The North Wind by Alexandra Warrick, author of the Four Winds series. The North Wind is a captivating standalone fantasy romance featuring an enemies to lovers narrative and with a slow burn element. It's infused with elements of Greek mythology and is reminiscent of Beauty and the Beast and the tale of Hades and Persephone. This enchanting novel marks the beginning of a series. So if you want to get in from the ground up, this is the time. It has garnered a dedicated following on TikTok, beloved by readers for its lush and captivating storytelling. And I have to say, I've been following it on TikTok because I'm slightly obsessed with TikTok at the moment. I know, weird. Anyway, here's the blurb. Wren of Edgewood is no stranger to suffering. With her parents gone, it's Wren's responsibility to ensure she and her sister survive the harsh and endless winter. But if the legends are to be believed, their home may not be safe for much longer. For 300 years, the land surrounding Edgewood has been encased in ice as the Shade, a magical barrier that protects the townsfolk from the dead lands beyond, weakens. Only one thing can stop the Shade's fall: the blood of a mortal woman bound in wedlock to the North Wind, a dangerous immortal whose heart is said to be as frigid as the land he rules, and the time has come to choose his bride. When the North Wind sets his eyes on Wren's sister, Wren will do anything to save her, even if it means sacrificing herself in the process. But mortal or not, Wren won't go down without a fight. I have three copies to give away, and I've made it super easy for you to enter. Just go to writercentre.com.au/win and follow the instructions. Entries close on the 6th of May. That's writercentre.com.au/win. And don't worry, if you're listening to this episode in the future sometime, there'll be, if you go to that URL, there'll be some other fantastic competition there for you to enter. And now, are you ready for the word of the week? I hope you are, because this week's word of the week is propinquity. Propinquity. It's P-R-O-P-I-N-Q-U-I-T-Y. Propinquity. It sounds like a made-up word, like maybe even a character in a fantasy novel, but it's actually a noun and it means nearness of place or time. So kind of like similar to proximity. So you could say, despite our propinquity in ages, the Duchess and I had nothing in common. And that was the word of the week. This podcast is brought to you by the Australian Writers' Centre and our course, Writing Picture Books. If you'd love to create your own picture book, our popular 5-week course in writing picture books will show you how. Learn online and discover what you need to know about point of view, structure, and pace, as well as language and rhythm, finding the right voice, working with illustrations, publishing options, and much more. You'll also receive personalised feedback from your tutor on your writing. Let's hear from Frida Chu.
I'm really excited that I'm now an author of my own picture book, A Trip to the Hospital, published by Allen & Unwin. I've always had a big dream of writing and illustrating my own picture books, but I was always really perplexed about the publishing industry and how to get published. The Writing Picture Books course at the Australian Writers' Centre was really helpful to me because it cut right to the chase about the ins and outs of the publishing industry, how to pitch your manuscript to a publisher, and also talked about the formal narratives of writing a picture book. After completing the Writing Picture Books course, I was just amazed at how much I learned than I had previously in my 2 years of trying to find out everything I could about the publishing process.
Find out more at writerscentre.com.au/picturebooks. That's writerscentre.com.au/picturebooks. Now let's move on to our writer in residence this week. Inda Akhmadzari is a multi-talented person. She trained as a surgical doctor, but now spends much of her time writing and illustrating stories for children. She has now written her fifth picture book, How to Measure the Ocean. And I wanted to talk to her about how she carved out her career as a picture book author and also how she fits it all in. Inda, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Valerie. It's a pleasure.
I am fascinated. I'm already fascinated to be able to talk to you because you have so many strings to your bow. But one of the strings is that you are a picture book author, and now you've already got five picture books out. The fifth one is How to Measure the Ocean, which is out now. I want to delve into your other picture books, how you got started in this career, because you're also a doctor, you're also an artist, you're also an incredibly accomplished person. But let's talk about this book first, and then we'll go into the rest. What is How to Measure the Ocean about, and how did you get the idea for this book?
Okay, so How to Measure the Ocean, I like to say that it's about the mathematics of water and other important things in life. So it's a picture book aimed at 4 to 8 year olds. And it really shares my deep love of the ocean, but also has, sort of scientific mathematical, analysis within it in a very gentle way, not like in a hardcore way that's going to intimidate you. But just in the way of inviting you to ask questions. What can be counted? What can't be counted? And does it matter either way? And there's a little surprise for readers at the end as well, which you know sort of shows them that they can kind of apply all of this mathematical / scientific thinking into areas of life that they might not have thought about.
What made you want to write this book?
Well, to be honest, it was inspired by a sketch. So I... in my career, I've done lots of sort of pitches and assessments to editors and eventually to agents, and I'm agented now. But I remember one particular editor was looking through my picture books and had also gone onto my website to have a look at some of the illustrations that I had on my portfolio. And unfortunately, picture books that I had showed her that day weren't right for her. But she said, oh, but what about this particular sketch? This is really intriguing. Could there be a story behind it? And I let that sit at the back of my mind for a little while. And it was actually a sketch that I'd made from a series of photographs that I took of my daughter when we were at the beach. It was just this kind of really simple moment where she was letting a paper boat, you know, go into the waves. And she was sort of crouching down, looking really sort of determined. And she was about 3 or 4 at the time. So that nice little toddler body habitus, that's really fun to sketch. And I did like a little triptych of it. And it kind of, I thought about it and I thought, you know, rather than a classic character-driven narrative, what if I infuse a, you know, a kind of running question through it, like a concept book? But what would this child be wondering about? Would she be wondering about the ocean? Would she be wondering about, you know, life? And my daughter, and it says this in a blurb at the back, my daughter, in that little curious age of hers, was learning about counting and mathematics. And she said to me, you know what I love about numbers is that they go on and on and on forever. And it just kind of really stuck with me because it was such a brilliant way to look at the world, but in a childlike / slightly meta way as well. And eventually I found a string through it about thinking about the ocean in that way and popped it in a manuscript.
I love that.
Yeah. So great. those sketches ended up. So this is one of the books where I submitted the manuscript as well as a storyboard. So sketches, thumbnails, and those sketches ended up right at the very end. It ended up being the ending to my book. And of course, afterwards, the storyboard changed altogether, but that was the basis of it.
Now, you're a little bit different to a lot of picture book authors because you also do illustrate. You're also an incredible artist. Normal picture book authors wouldn't normally submit sketches and a storyboard and that sort of stuff. But obviously you had the benefit of, you know, having those skills. Now, what I would love to know, because not only do you write, you've written 5 books, as I've mentioned, and you're a fantastic writer that really just connects with your audience. You are also obviously a talented illustrator. You have illustrated some, not all, of your picture books. Yeah. You are a surgical doctor and you have children. I don't know how you have the time, but tell me, when you were little, did you think, oh, I'm going to be a doctor and a picture book author and illustrate an artist?
No.
What was the plan or the area of interest when you were younger? What did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
I've always loved writing. So I always knew writing was going to be in there. And then I kind of streamlined that into journalism for a little while. At one point, I thought, I'll go to uni and do astrophysics and journalism, as if that was like the thing to do. But medicine didn't really come till after I graduated high school. So I wasn't one of the people who said from they were 4 that they were going to be a doctor. But towards the end of high school, you know, it was the humanities that kind of really moved me. And I thought that I could serve the world or save the world in that sort of idealistic age by becoming a doctor. And I love sciences and I love biology. So I went for that. But I always wrote, and throughout university, so I went to uni in England, in Bristol, and I kept up a blog. I have a string of blogs to my history because I'd start one and then not finish it and then start another one, the way that you would with notebooks probably. But I remember keeping up a blog during uni just with random thoughts. It might be a poem sometimes. It might be like talking about the cold weather. It might be talking about what I saw in clinic. And I always had it in mind that I would write this novel. That was what I wanted to do.
In an adult novel?
Yeah, as an adult, because that's what I love to read. I love literary fiction, particularly, but I read widely and I wanted to write that book. And it wasn't until I had kids myself that I kind of went into, I never thought I'd write children's books, but, you know, I fell into that and love it. That's how
what,
it all went.
What do you love about writing children's books, particularly if initially your first instinct was to, you know, that you thought you might write adult fiction?
I think I discovered the genius of picture books when I had my daughter. We'd sit and read, and we were very lucky that she was one of those kids that would sit down throughout the whole book and point things out. So I really got to indulge myself, and I saw how the interplay of words and pictures were genius, like especially when they didn't quite match up, when the pictures weren't just telling, you know, kind of parroting the words, when there was a little bit more visual interaction there. And when I started to write them, the limitations of picture books, so picture book texts are about 500 words, rarely much more than that. It's always sort of 32 pages. And those limitations were like this really addictive puzzle for me. I loved the fact that I can't just have, you know, verbal diarrhea and vomit everything out. I have to be brutal with my edits. I have to stew for days to find the exact word that will earn its place. And that is like a problem solving thing that I love.
Now, you raise an interesting point that picture books are rarely over 500 words and they are typically 32 pages in Australia, especially. And that's a fairly straightforward guideline that so many people who want to write picture books do not know.
Yes.
And we teach all those guidelines in our course in writing picture books. Now, you've done lots of courses at the Australian Writers' Centre, many, many different types of courses. Take me back to when you, because you study medicine in the UK and then you came and you worked in Sydney and Brisbane and so on. What was the trigger that made you think, I'm going to also write now? Because I've always wanted to,
yeah,
but a lot of people always want to and then never go do it. So what was the thing that made you do it?
So it goes back to the sea, actually. So when my daughter was two, so before COVID, we were lucky enough to go back to Malaysia, which is where I'm from, every year. And when she was turning two, we went on a big trip. We went to the beach. And we had been reading her all sorts of picture books. One of her favorites is Magic Beach by the rock star Alison Lester. And we were getting ready. We just arrived at the hotel. We were getting ready in the room. And we must have been too slow because she had her togs on already. And then she started reciting this. And at first, I didn't quite catch what it was. But it was the full phrase of, you know, what did she say? Magic Beach, at our Magic Beach, we play in the sand for hours, building in something with buckets and spades. She just recited the whole thing. And I sort of went, what did you just say? And grabbed my phone and asked her to say it again. And we had the book with us, and it was actually the words. So she absorbed that just from us reading to her every night. And that triggered to me that picture books were so magical. And it was obviously a huge part of our lives, what more other people's lives. And because we were in Malaysia, I also wanted to kind of write something simple and quick but meaningful for her about Malaysia, so that she'd have something of her heritage to bring back to us in Australia. And so I'd already started kind of coming up with ideas. When we got back to Brisbane that year, we went to a local library, and then there was a sign up saying free workshop, how to write picture books. It was with Elisa Darlison, who's a very accomplished picture book writer and children's author in general. And I was like, oh, this is a sign. So I signed up for that little workshop. And that's when I learned that it was 500 words and 32 pages. That's when I learned that, you know, when you submit to publishers, it goes to a slush pile, that you don't get to pick your illustrator. I thought that picture book authors and illustrators were these best friends that sat down together and then, you know, made this book. It was so eye-opening. So that was 2017, and that was the start of it all.
And so now How to Measure the Ocean is mm-hmm. published by Allen and Unwin.
Yeah.
And the last book you had published with Allen and Unwin was mm-hmm. The Month That Makes the Year. Now, yes. What is that about?
So The Month That Makes the Year is the first traditionally published book about Ramadan in Australia. A fact that I am very proud of, but also, you know, slightly concerned about, because it kind of shows us how much we need to work towards having more diverse titles in our market. So it's about the experience of a Muslim family, particularly the main character, who's a little girl named Dini, and she obviously knows about Ramadan, but it's the first time she's going to try and fast herself. So it's not obligatory for children to fast in Ramadan, but lots of us, like when I was growing up in Malaysia, we all went for it, and it wasn't a punitive thing at all. We actually enjoyed it because it meant that we were like part of, you know, the spirit. But you lose that spirit when you're outside of a Muslim country. So I totally was into Ramadan when I was a child, but because I studied in the UK and eventually worked in Australia, that's when I realized how different Ramadan would be for someone living abroad, or, you know, living in a Muslim country. So I wanted to infuse both those experiences. Like, what is it going to be like for my kids living in Australia? And what was it like for me, living in Malaysia? So I melded that together and it kind of follows little Dini's journey throughout Ramadan. But what I also wanted to do was not focus so much on the not eating and drinking, because Ramadan is so much more than that. So it sort of shows you how you can still enjoy lots of things, how can you can still do lots of good stuff and benefit from all of the other sort of pillars of Ramadan.
It's not eating and drinking in a particular part of the day. It's not like the whole day for any.
Yeah,
those
exactly.
Who don't
it's
know.
Only from dawn until sunset. And everything that kind of you know, goes with that.
Wonderful. And what has the reception been to that?
It's been so heartwarming, I have to say. Like, so the the origin, can I tell you the origin story of how
Please.
This came to be? So
absolutely.
So the year that I wrote this book, I was heavily pregnant with my twin boys. While we're pregnant, we don't fast. We have the option to kind of like opt out of that. And I don't think a lot of people realize that either. So I had to go and do this glucose tolerance test, which is like a really yucky drink that you have to drink at the pathologist. Then you have to sit there for 2 hours and then do another blood test. So you have a blood test before and after. So I obviously had a book with me, but as I was sitting there, and this was all done during Ramadan, as I was sitting there, I was reflecting a little bit and I decided to take a selfie and post it on Instagram. And I was saying that I'm not fasting this year because I'm pregnant. And the only fasting that I'm doing is these 2 hours between my blood tests. But even then, even though I can't partake in a fasting, there's actually so much that I can do around Ramadan. It's about generosity, giving donations. It's about just being kind to people. It's about community and so on and so forth. And I posted that and I got so many messages from people, especially from non-Muslims, saying, I really did not realize that Ramadan was all that. They sort of associated Ramadan with not eating and drinking, the end, and hadn't really thought beyond that. And so they were really sort of intrigued and, glad for the information. And my agent, Annabelle, wrote to me and said, I really liked your post. And she said that she was so curious about it that she went to the library afterwards to find some Ramadan books for her children, because she said that she knew, you know, some kids in her children's school or some families did not fast, but hadn't thought beyond that either. And it made her curious. And that's when she realized that there aren't any in Australia. Most of them were from the US or maybe the UK. And she said, if you'd like, would you like to write a book? So she's a very you do you, not pushy kind of person, but she planted that seed in my mind. And I thought about it because I love Ramadan and I've always wanted to write a Ramadan book, but I never sort of found a form. And then I realized that I can write this for children in countries like Australia where they are practicing as a minority. And what would that look like for them? What would that look like for the community around them? And that's how I wrote it.
I love that. Now, talk to me about, so you've got twins and your daughter and you write books, all these things. And also just to give listeners context, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, you grew up in Malaysia, you studied in the UK, you've lived in Australia for a very long time, but now you're in Riyadh.
Yes, that's right.
But you still are very active in the Australian picture book community, Australian writing community. What are you doing in Riyadh?
So my husband's also a doctor, and he got an offer to come to Riyadh to set up a new unit and so on and so forth. So we said, yeah, okay, let's give it a go. We don't know how it's gonna go, but let's do it. And it was a bit hectic and crazy, especially with the twins, because my daughter is nearly 9 now. So she was easy enough to move around, but we really had to logistically think about the baby twins. And we just kind of jumped in and did it. And here we are, and we might be here for a year, a couple of years before we head back to Brisbane, hopefully.
And are you doctoring there or are you concentrating fully on authoring?
Yeah, no, I'm not doctoring here. I'm taking a hiatus. I was doing part-time in Brisbane anyway before we left. And so now I'm taking a little bit of hiatus because I have enough on my plate, I think.
Yeah, I think you do. So when you were doctoring, when you were working as a doctor as well in Brisbane, how were you dividing your time? How were you fitting it all in? Please get granular with me because I think people are like, how in the world would you do it all?
Okay, so it's a lot of taking yours and Al's advice because I've been a listener of this podcast for many, many years and you guys always say create in the cracks and that's what I do. I create in the cracks. It does revolve around the kids, obviously. And that's a little bit of a spanner in the works. Like when one of them is sick or lots of them are sick, you just can't get anything done. And I think I've just learned to accept that and just roll with it. But for example, when we were in Brisbane, my daughter would just go to school around the corner. So that's just sort of, you know, drop off and pick up afterwards. Then there's the babies. But then if I can squeeze out an hour or two in the evening or during nap times or something like that, I think what I do is that I'm always having something brewing in my head and I just let it brew. Picture books in particular, I would get an idea, but I don't actually write anything down until I find a form to it. And by that, I mean either I get a really, really clear idea of either the plot or the character, or sometimes it's a refrain that starts to pull me in. And until I get that form, I don't do anything with it. I just let it cook. And so when I do get that form, I just scribble things down really madly, or I email things to myself, or I, you know, just jotting down things. And then when I have a stretch, you know, of time where I can sit down and do my work, I'll do that. So that's what I do.
Wow. So, I mean, I know, I mean, you're already, after five books, you're already an established picture book author in Australia. But I know you have an interest in writing adult fiction.
Yeah.
So where's that at and what's your plan for that? Do you think, oh, well, after your kids grow up, your interest might naturally progress, or where's the adult fiction at?
So I have a full draft of an adult novel that I actually peddled around and had shown to agents and publishers and things, and there was interest there, and they all said, when you finish it, send it in. I haven't sent it in, and it's been a few years down the line now, and I think I'll change it. I don't know if I love it as much anymore. I think that eventually I'll change the form of it. In a few years, I don't know. It's in a drawer.
Yeah, sometimes it has to stay in a drawer.
The proverbial drawer.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes it needs to stay in the drawer or the hard drive for a little while to let it, as you say, cook for a while, because you might change your mind.
Exactly. Mm. So that's, but you know, writing that draft out was a good, and I keep hearing this from your interviewees as well, like just having written that draft gave me so much. So I am not there yet. But in the meantime, I do have a middle grade novel. So that's sort of an in-between. That's something that I actually won an ASA mentorship award for. So we were working, I was working with a mentor for it for a year and a half. And that is slowly coming out of the drawer. And hopefully it will be fully out of the drawer sometime in the first half of this year. I don't know if I necessarily sort of planned it that way in terms of, you know, gradually going up in age. I think so. Alison Rushby said this to us at one of our agency meetings. So Annabelle would host like a big meeting with all of her clients. And she said, electricity, not obligation. And I think I kind of lean into that a little bit too much sometimes, where it's like, it's what grabs me at the moment. That's what I'm going to work on. And you mentioned that I've got a lot of different interests, and I always have way too many projects in my head. And I think I got to get better at streamlining those and focusing on one at a time, but I'm not very good at that. But every day I wake up, there's going to be one that's most forefront in my mind, and that's the one that I'm going to work on.
That is such a good approach. That is absolutely such a good approach. I absolutely think so. Unless you have a deadline and therefore a contract that you need to adhere to. I think that that is definitely a good approach. Now, I know, even though I don't know for sure, I suspect I'm correct in thinking that I've only scratched the surface of your interests. What other things are you doing, other projects that are potentially in a different creative medium or something that, you know, interests you that we haven't talked about? Because I'm curious.
God. Okay. So earlier this, no, it wasn't this year. It was last year. Late last year, I decided, and this was me brainstorming because I'm here in Riyadh and I feel like I'm not doing my usual surgical job. And I feel like I need to diversify a little bit in terms of financial income and so on and so forth. And I thought, what can I do? And I decided to really lean into being an artist and just own it. And I started dabbling in surface pattern design. So I,
Fantastic.
yeah, and I know you do that really, really well too.
Yes.
So I start learning how to do that on my Procreate app on an iPad, so digitally. And I have sort of signed up to a lot of PD stuff with regards to that, but I'm trying to be very good and not overload myself with too many projects. So I'm still kind of keeping up lots of sketching and lots of idea gathering, but I'm gonna, I think, start to do that more seriously next year because there's lots of other stuff that I want to do this year. The other one that I've also just launched is an online drawing course called You Can Draw. So I've just made a small launch for now, but I have bigger plans for the future, and that's
That. That's
Yeah,
so
thank
good.
you. That's leading into the fact that I didn't start drawing till I was in my mid-30s. I was too scared to draw because I thought if you do sciences, you do sciences, you're not an artist, and vice versa. And that was something that unfortunately was drummed into us from school, probably, this kind of division and dichotomy of things. It doesn't have to be that way at all. And I've found a whole world of joy through art. And I want that for other people as well. So that's the other one. And I guess with the current state of the world, one of my biggest day-to-day projects at the moment is raising awareness for the genocide in Gaza. And so a lot of my current posts, whether it's in writing or in art, has to do with raising awareness of that and advocating for that. And just trying to get people to raise their voices, write to their MPs, demand change, and just block out the misinformation from the propaganda that's been, happening for years and years. So I've recently committed to three different auctions with my artwork. And one of the this amazing exhibition or this amazing curator in Italy has gathered a whole bunch of artists for an exhibition called Con Altri Occhi. And it will be starting off somewhere in Italy and going through different places. And they asked me to be part of it because I'd shared some of my art online. And it's really humbling to be part of that as well, because the other artists are just totally amazing. But it also just shows how much solidarity there is around the world and how much people just want peace and for all, the atrocities to end. So that's one of my current, passion projects.
You are busy. Now, as I mentioned, you've done many, many courses at the Australian Writers' Centre, including Creative Writing Stage One, I think Short Story Essentials, probably, and presenting to kids and stuff like that. What did the courses teach you that was valuable?
So they're all a little bit different, and you'll notice that picture books isn't on there just because I've done picture book courses elsewhere and I didn't want to sort of overlap, and because I had like so many other interests. And I love the structure. Like, you guys have such nice structure, sort of step by step. I am a very messy person, but I appreciate some structure as well. And so those courses have helped me zone into things one at a time and build on that. And then I think one of the most important things is to just keep consistency as well. And that's something that you've always talked about, throughout your podcast, just always keeping at it, not giving up and not leaving it by the wayside. So I think having a course that's always there, and a lot of them I can just kind of jump back in and refer to all the time, that keeps my writing practice going.
And so what's the grandmaster plan now? There
Keep
is you
going.
have the world is your oyster. What are you working on next? How about we go with that?
What am I working on next? Okay, so gosh, I'm still recovering from finishing the illustrations for How to Measure the Ocean, to be honest. That took me the better half of last year. Thanks to my kids, because they were sick all the time from daycare germs, mostly. But I am, so we're on submissions with a bunch of other projects. I guess the most pressing one in terms of my submissions, or getting it submission ready, will be my middle grade novel.
Wonderful. And if you had to think of your top three writing tips for aspiring writers who'd love to be in a position where you are one day, what would they be?
So my first one would be to get outside. And that's
what do you mean?
You're giving me a funny look.
You mean the outdoors?
The outdoors, yes. And this is advice that I am actually just giving to myself as well. Just get outside. We sit indoors for way too much of our writing and illustrating life. And when you go outside, everything's different. Everything's different every single day. Something is going to brush up against you and inspire you. Something is going to, you know, the sky might be a different color, or you might say hello to someone and that might spark something. And I just really think that it's very healthy. And I'm not saying this, you know, I'm giving this advice to myself and reminding myself to go for a walk today as well. But I feel like just changing up the environment and being in nature, forest bathing, if you might, is one of those things that when you come back from that, you're super refreshed, and then your brain is just fizzing with lots of ideas. And I think that'll make your writing better.
That's such good advice. I love it. I actually think that's just really refreshing. I love it. Yeah, okay. Please go
and
on.
Then, second tip. The second tip will be to put your writing or your art out there. I used to love going for workshops, like in-person workshops or something. And what I used to love about it is the prompts that they have, like, okay, 15 minutes, we're all going to write this according to this prompt. And because it's a prompt that had not been in my head earlier, I'll brainstorm like crazy to come up with something in 15 minutes. And again, that time limitation really forces you. But then share it, read it out. So that people are aware of where, you know, what's in your mind, what you're capable of, or what you might be capable of someday, because the whole reason why they're there is to give you feedback on what you've just written. And similarly with art, I posted things on Instagram well before I was ready to post anything. And they were really sort of dodgy, you know, early works kind of thing. But eventually people realized that she's trying and she's getting better over the years, and you know, she's really into this, and people start noticing, and you know, just having a little kind of thumbnail of you in their head. So do that.
I love it.
And then the third thing is very current to right now, and what I mentioned earlier as well. And so I would say that if you write for kids, then fight for kids. You know, I'm just continually horrified by this genocide. It is a war. Wars are always bad and it always affects children, but this war in particular is affecting children in a rate that we've never seen before. There's 15,000 people, you know, kids, only kids killed in 150 days. That is not acceptable, and they're starving and so on and so forth. And I feel like we are, as children book creators, we're the champions of children, and we have to, there are a lot of people who are speaking up and doing lots of wonderful things about this. But there's still so much scope, I feel, in the children's book world in general, that I would have loved to see from the beginning of this terrible atrocity. So if you write for kids, fight for kids. That's what I'm holding on to these days.
Thank you so much for sharing all of your advice and your passions on this podcast today, Inda. Thank you so
much. Thank you, Valerie. It's my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Inda. Now, I want to leave you with this fun fact. It's about the word barbecue, and it's on my mind because we had a barbecue on the weekend. The word barbecue comes from a Caribbean word, which means a framework of sticks set upon posts or a raised wooden platform. The Spanish wrote it down in the 1500s as barbacoa, B-A-R-B-A-C-O-A, and it entered English shortly after as barbecue. So that's a bit of trivia for you this week that you can use at your next pub quiz. Anyway, thank you so much for hanging out with me this week. I really appreciate it. Do feel free to connect with me on social media. I'm at Valerie Khoo, that's K-H-O-O, on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm over at valeriekhoo.com. And please do connect with everyone in the listener community via Facebook. Just search for So You Want to Be a Writer podcast community and request to join. It's free to join, and it's a fantastic place from people from all walks of life who all share a love and interest in writing. So I hope to see you there. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I look forward to chatting to you again next time. Thanks for listening to So You Want to Be a Writer. You'll find the show notes at writercentre.com.au/podcast. Or sign up for our awesome and often hilarious weekly newsletter at writercentre.com.au/news, where you'll find writing resources, giveaways, competitions, and much more.